Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and we're sentenced to beer.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
We're the Drunk Guys, and this week we are reading The Green Mile by Stephen King, and Jimmy is starting with a beer.
This is the book about the electric chair, and how many watts would you say that chair produces?
A large number of them.
25 watts.
10,000.
Oh, close. It's actually 18 watts.
I knew it was named after a low wattage guitar amp.
Yeah. It's, you know, don't touch the insides. It'll kill you. And this is 18 watt from Single Cut. And it's IPA. And it's perfectly fine. It's very nice. Num, 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 num. Shockingly good.
Oh, you should be writing copy for these people.
Copy that.
Once we finish our sentence of beer. The Green Mile, Stephen King novel published serially in 1996 and then quickly turned around into a movie, which is exactly the same as the book. See you next week. Tell us what you thought.
But in other country releases, it's called The Green Kilometer.
It's just the Green 1.8 kilometers is like the convert. Yes, it's a Los Kilometre Verde. So it is a novel that was published in a bunch of forms, and then the minute that last edition came out, Stephen King's publisher was like, hey, let's do that all again, but in one book form. And that's the version you could read now. Though I bet those individual ones are probably vaguely collectible by people.
When I was younger, I had the series of like six tiny novellas. I don't know where they are. I doubt I have them anymore. But that's how I first read it.
I remember hearing about it.
It's a real good way to pad your Goodreads count.
I did consider doing that. Oh, man, I could start the year off strong. I don't think he changed much when he collected them into the book. Except for in the version I read, there's a long introduction where he talks about the process. And he says, I did fix this one continuity error, but I just left it because fuck it, there's cocaine to be done. And then that's what we read.
I think he wrote this after his cocaine phase, but maybe not.
Yeah, it felt to me like it was after his cocaine phase because it kind of made sense.
This was, in many ways, his most measured, reasonable book.
I'm going to say it now. I think it's his best one. Certainly the best one I've read.
It absolutely honestly, it's his best. And as someone who likes Stephen King a lot, like this is, in terms of literature, it's far and away his best book. But in terms of like, Stephen King books, it's still probably his best, absolutely top three.
So, it takes place in primarily 1932, though they changed that for the movie, apparently, for some dumb reason. But
Tom Hanks wasn't born yet.
Oh, that's right, yeah. But also in the present day, when a really old man is writing his memoirs down, and that really old man is Paul something. And
Edgecombe.
Edgecombe. He is, you know, an old man in a nursing home, and he's writing down the memoir, but he was a prison guard in 1932 on death row in some southern prison. Tennessee? Georgia? Somewhere around there?
Georgia.
Now, he lives in Georgia as an old man, but the prison was in Alabama, wasn't it?
I really thought it was in Georgia. I don't, you know, that's because we're from New York. We think everything in the South is Alabama or Texas,
I don't know. This. Yeah, because he mentions moving to Atlanta. Prison is in Louisiana, not far from Vicksburg, Mississippi. That's why there's all those fucking Cajun people in it.
Oh, that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
So he's like, you know, it was really crazy when what's the term we're supposed to say? African American? Is that what we call him now? African American guy came to the prison because he's a man from the South who was born in the 1800s. You know, this had to be sanitized. And
yeah.
He's like, his name was John Coffey, and it was wild, and it's going to take me 600 pages to tell you why, because I'm Stephen King, really. But
this is his least rambling book ever.
No, I agree. Like, everything that happens kind of matters. Like, you don't know the name of Percy's
even
second
the fucking
grade
mouse.
Teacher. It all comes back, which, if he could just make... I left this book with a new appreciation for Stephen King. Like, if he was able to just start and produce this without planning it, it's like, God damn, this guy is actually really good. Because, like, everything mattered. Everything came back. It wasn't like his other rambly books. Like, let me tell you about that drunk bus driver and the bunion she has for 12 pages to, like, figure out the next move.
I mean, especially since he put this out, it was... Originally, it was a serial novel. Like, the plan was, like, do it like an olden times thing. And they decided 12 months is too long. No one's going to give a shit for that long. So they said, I'm going to make 6 short ones. So each month, a new novella came out in whatever magazine. And so he really had to, A, probably burn him out a little bit, or at least have an actual plan in place that had to stick to.
Because he had to finish in a certain amount of pages, essentially, right? If he committed to 6 volumes.
Yeah.
He could be like, here's volume 6. Well, it's 900
not
pages.
Not having enough pages has never been his problem.
Right, but having just too much shit, like if he just sets up too many things and he couldn't tie it up at the end, he's like, uh-oh, how am I going to finish these 19 characters plot lines in 140 pages? Cocaine, engage. So he, Paul is there, and he kind of goes back and forth in time, but they're in the Green Mile is the name of the linoleum path to the electric chair, where people are, because it's the South in 1932, electrocuted every 19 minutes. So he sits there, they have guys there where they like file their last appeal and then they fry them.
See, I don't think so. They don't really go through all these appeals back then. It's pretty much like sentence.
Their appeals are just saying, hey, like, please.
There's just a matter of days. It seems to be just like a matter of days, maybe weeks from like their trial is over, which was also very short period of time from, you know, being arrested to the trial to execution. It's very short. It's not like today.
Because largely they were minorities. So not all of them.
Minorities, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Guilty.
Guilty of being minorities.
Oh, yeah. Strike one. It's 1932 Louisiana. They're not... I can be like, listen, we need to understand the systemic pressures that were on this young man when he made that decision. They're like, no, fry that bitch.
Or he was just nearby.
Or he looked like a guy, and you know he would have sooner or later. Though everybody, yeah. Bar one, is super guilty, so that's not part of the book.
Except John Coffey.
Well, yeah, but like John Coffey, we'll get, yeah.
You don't know that right away. But you know what else? You know who else would be probably pretty guilty?
Nate, are you guilty of having a beer?
I know. I'm about to be. You know, right now it's premeditated.
You are about to get off on good behavior. Your sentence of beer is going to get extended.
You know who else would probably go to the electric chair in Louisiana in 1932?
God, Nate, do not pull out a black IPA.
Strawberry cannibal, if it's not a black IPA, though. Or a stout. Probably a strawberry cannibal by other half.
Oh, yeah. Because that's two strikes. A cannibal and fruity, you know.
Yeah, there you go. This is a smoothie sour with strawberry from other half.
Smoothie sour. It's got grass in it and carrots.
No. It's just
sugar.
It's just a lot of strawberry. Mm, it's so good. It's basically just strawberry candy. But like real strawberry, not just like, you know, oops, I'm like spilling it. It's not just like those like fake strawberry candy things.
It's more like a gelato than a Breyers.
Ah, yes, there you go. But it is really good.
So there's a lot of like going back and forth and him being like something crazy happened that time with John Coffey. But John Coffey is a black man who has been convicted of raping and murdering 2 young white girls. And he is a giant. They make him even bigger in the movie, but he's a 6'8" diesel dude. And he's so big they can't find the clothes that fit him. He's wearing, honestly,
all pants
like
are capris.
He was dressed like a little rascal. Like he's wearing overalls that don't reach his feet. It's like, and he doesn't have shoes that could fit because he's, you know, Shaq. So he comes in and he just cries all the time, like, oh my God, what a giant bitch, you know? And then he,
and he's clearly like a little off.
Yeah.
He's not firing on all cylinders.
Well, nobody there is.
No, but like, you know, everyone's a little crazy, but he seems like he's a little slow. Like he doesn't remember anything once it left. He's got no object permanence. Sometimes he just forgets stuff. He forgets where he is. He doesn't really always seem like he knows what's happening. And he's
scared of the dark.
He's scared. Like a child. He's always scared. Even though he is the biggest man anyone's ever seen. And you know what he's got? Probably.
It's probably big, yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. It
comes up later.
They've got to be huge because he is heavy-handed. this is heavy-handed. And I figured I'd get around to it sooner or later, and it happened to be sooner. This is a Federer-aged Schwartz beer.
Oh, no, you know what Schwartz means?
Yeah. I saw that too, but heavy-handed was too easy. But yes, it is
it is pretty
beer.
Heavy-handed in this case, Jimmy.
Yeah, this is actually quite heavy-handed. And it's made by Killsboro, like the chair does. This is a triple hit, triple threat. And Kevin Federline, criminally stupid.
Not every month when he cashes those alimony checks from criminally insane Britney Spears.
It's a Schwartz beer. They all taste the same. You know, malty.
So much more delicate flavor.
It's not that delicate. It's fucking malty as shit.
But then, you know, the snobs will be like, there's hints of cardamom, you know, that kind of thing.
I'm getting hints of malt and maybe like an overtones of malt.
I hear you, though I'm sure, you know, there are like 30 different types of
I'm sure if
malts.
I had like
so
three
a beer snob would yeah if you had them yeah. next to each other
if I had three Schwartz beers here I'd be like yeah these are different but I haven't had a fucking Schwartz beer in like 3 years.
I hear you.
But I'd be when I bought it I was like I know what this is gonna taste like and I was right.
You're like a Shiner for beer. So oh wrong book. So the other there's another guy. I mean, I kind of forget the order in the beginning because they kind of come in. It kind of goes back and forth. But then we meet.
The order
the
is a
characters.
Little loosey goosey.
Another character is Dell, the stupid Cajun guy, who...
Edward Delacroix.
Yes. Edward, it's spelled fucking ridiculous. Like,
he is a little Cajun man.
Who, and there's this was one of the more Stephen King-y kind of lines I felt, where Delacroix is in there for raping and murdering a girl, a child. And then trying to burn the body and creating a fire that burns down the building, killing 6 more people.
Yeah.
Horrific nightmare crime. And then Stephen King throws in this line, like, you know, his like weird things he says about characters in books. Sometimes like, he was a man you knew only had one murder in him. He would never have done it again. It's like, how could you fucking, really? You think, really?
Is that a thing?
He raped and killed a kid. Why would he, that's just like in his like a random description of him. It's like, why would... What a strange assertion. And I get that he's trying to make him kind of sympathetic. But like, he's a simpleton who befriends a mouse. You don't need to be like, it was just one bad decision. You know, he was a simple man.
He does cry about it a lot.
Well, yeah, but, you know, he grew up a po' boy in Louisiana.
He's a little shrimp.
I just felt like that line is like, that's a Stephen King line. When he says it about characters, like, she was the kind of woman who knew what she needed, and it was cock. And, like, he just says like, these weird declarative sentences about people. She needed writer's cock.
We don't know what his penis looked like, though, which we do for several other characters.
Oh, yeah. If you add them all up, it's a mile. There's some big ones. And then we meet some of the guards. And I forget that most of their names, but Percy matters. Percy's, much like his name, a little
much like his
bitch.
Namesake.
Fucking piece of shit.
Percy Wetmore.
Yeah.
Because he pisses himself.
It's
at least twice.
The most foreshadowing thing Stephen King's like, those fucking scholars think I don't do literary devices. I'm going to name the piss pants guy Wetmore. See if they catch this one. But he is a connected, he's connected to the governor.
The governor's wife is his aunt.
And it's the Depression. So, you know, people need jobs. And he's protected from up on high by the governor and given this job. And every time he complains, then the warden's like, dude, I'm going to have to fire the people that are annoying this guy because the governor is going to get involved. And, you know, he kind of pays attention to what happens on death row because he could, like, stop those executions and shit.
And Percy is clearly like a sadist.
Oh, yeah. He's a kid. I mean, in the movie, he's much older, but he's like 21 or something. You know, in 1932, that was a little bit more, you were more independent by then.
You had nine still, kids by then.
Yeah, you were almost retired and dead. But he's a young brat, and that's going to matter a few times. Though, fortunately, he'll get his comeuppance.
Because the other guys on the team that is on the death row ward is like Paul and his good friends who have been there a long time. And, you know, it's at any time there's at most three or four prisoners who each have their own cell and four or five guards. So it's not like they're like ready to get beat people up or get in fights all the time, because it's a very relatively calm part of the prison. And they say, this is how this works. You know, you keep them calm because these guys are all on the edge because they're going to be executed.
Of living.
Yeah. Edge. Edgecomb. Oh, God.
And he has hair.
They do say he has hair.
I'm not sure what else to do with that comb.
Yeah. They mention he still has all his hair when he's old. But yeah, so Percy is, he likes to hit people with his baton and like trash talk them and like stir shit up. They're like, dude, that's not what this is for. You're a little piece of shit.
Yep. For example, when they bring in Delacroix, who is, you know, little, and Percy's one of those small people who wants to be a bully.
He's got Chihuahua energy.
Yeah.
He's a short king.
He's dragging, you know, they're dragging Del out of the van or whatever the hell it is.
A jalopy.
Yeah, it's definitely a jalopy.
It's a Louisiana prison.
In the Depression. This is like not even, what's before the Model T? something
it's
earlier.
One of those mine carts where there's a pump on both sides.
Oh, when he drags Del out, Del like stumbles and falls and brushes against Percy's crotch. And he's like, he's gay. He tried to grab my joint. I'm like, shut the fuck up, dude. What was he going to do with it? Like, he's going to death row. He's like, well, if I'm going to go out, I'm going to go out gay. I'm just going to grab this little white boy's penis. And maybe the guy spoke with a, you know, sometimes impenetrable Cajun accent. He's like, I'm going in to get down that penis there. And then he's like, I need an adult. So, you know, he likes to bully him, and he calls him all sorts of slurs for gay men for really no, with no evidence, just because he's a bitch.
Also because it's 1930s Louisiana.
Oh, well, yeah, totally. But he liked it. What was the line in Joe Dirt? Nate has no idea.
Homo,
but,
while you make it.
Yeah, I wanted to home where you make it.
You like to see homos naked.
You want,
no.
That's what Del said,
where, homie, where you make it. Home.
Then there's a character that I don't think was in the movie. It was like the chief. And I was like, is Chief Bromden in this fucking? Like, what is this guy doing here?
That's what I thought too, yeah.
he's the first guy executed. He is a Native American who also, he murdered a guy.
He killed a dude in a drunken fight over like Jordans. It was over boots.
It was. He's there at the very beginning. And he's treated with respect by all the other guards except Percy, of course, because they know how to do the gig. They know how to, you know, keep things moving smoothly. And it's not a job they take lightly. It's hard to routinely kill people, even when it's, you know, state-sanctioned. They are hitmen.
But they also know that this is, like, they got to work.
They got to work, and, you know, they think it's not necessarily like they think it's the right thing to do. They know it's like, this is the law, and they want to make sure that it's done correctly, because they don't want to see needless suffering. Because it's the electric chair. It's
except for
fucking
Percy.
Intent.
He
except for
wants
Percy.
To see needless suffering. But everybody else, they want to be professional. They do a rehearsal. Like, they actually, like, practice it. Like, you do this, you go over there, and he describes in, like, detail, because it's going to be important later, how to actually, like, go through with, you put, you know, you bring them to the spot, you strap them in, you put the bag over the head, you, like, have to clamp them on the, like, the back, around the back of the legs, and then there's this, over the along the head, there's this thing where the electrodes are, and you're supposed to get it wet with salt water so that it conducts electricity. But then this other weird thing happens, which is what's his name? Paul?
Oh, his penis isn't working?
Yes.
He it's a Stephen King book. Infection. Someone's penis is not going to work.
Or it's going to work too much.
Yeah.
He has a urinary tract infection that he just so every time he has to pee, it just hurts so much.
Have you guys ever had a UTI?
I have not.
No, I'm not a lady.
Guys don't get them that much, but like every time a girl gets them, it's like it's like they're being murdered.
Yeah, it's really bad. It's inflammation. There's a couple. I Googled it because like, well, how do you get one of those? I just know you drink cranberry juice when you have
it's
one.
It's from sounding too aggressively.
I mean, it is from getting things in there, and getting poop in your penis could give you a UTI.
Well, it's be a careful good thing now. I always do an enema first.
So, but it is, nowadays, it's cured with fucking, you know, over-the-counter shit or like penicillin or something, which was not available to this guy. So he complains about the medicine, which is like probably just pure arsenic or something.
It's sulfate. He kept calling it, I guess, sulfates. I don't know what the fuck science that is, but.
Just a bunch of Alka-Seltzer. Just, like, just take their shit. Who knows what happened?
You put the Alka-Seltzer in the water and you put your dick in there and the bubbles clear it out.
It's the plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Now you can go take a piz.
Yeah.
It was the original slogan, I believe. So he's like, I'm not taking that shit. I'm just going to tough it out. This dick will rot off or work. I don't know. So just everyone, ever as soon as stuff starts happening throughout the first half of the book or so, every so often it's going to come to a grinding halt for this man to take a painful piss.
A fire piss.
Fire piss, pissing out shards of glass, all sorts
of things.
Some
of the best parts of the film, watching Tom Hanks sweating and crying while he tries to pee.
What a weak stream.
This is art.
I'm not a smart man, but I know what piss is.
He was doing the same fucking accent, too.
What other Tom Hanks lines could he say while he's pissed? Not Houston, we have a problem.
It's big.
This is like being against the volcano. Like what? No one saw that, Tom. No one saw that movie. So,
someone save my privates.
Ryan.
I wish it was a Ryan in this book.
So that's happening. And you're like, okay, what the fuck does this have to do with what is the plot of this book?
It's turns about out one it man's, does matter.
One man's quest to save his wiener.
Never was so much given by so many for one wiener. So then he... so dumb. So it does all matter. The one Stephen King book where all of these things actually will matter.
All the dick-related stuff actually is quite important to the plot.
Unbelievable. Incredible.
It's like he focused, he held his breath, did no cocaine for 6 months, and wrote a book that makes sense within itself. And since then, hasn't done it again since.
Yeah, he got to the end. He goes, I'm never doing that shit again.
I was so bored. Oh, my God.
So, I was at the store the other day. There's a fucking new Stephen King book out that I, like, piles of hardcover books. Like, again? Is it, like, it's that time of year already?
Every time you look, he's made another one. He's like an amoeba. They just keep butting off.
So, Nate, what does actually happen? Or matter?
So, Paul is one. He's at the prison, you know, because he's at his job. And isn't he on the night shift? Aren't they like the night shift guys?
Anyways, they switch it up.
All right. So, and he, like, you know, he's taking one of these fiery pisses. And John Coffey is like, sir, come over here.
Boss. Like,
boss. Yeah, there you go. It was boss. Come over here, boss. And Paul's like, oh, God, okay. And then John Coffey, the giant 6'8" black man, puts his hand on Paul's dick.
He tells him to come into the cell. And he's by himself. There's no other guards there. And even Delacroix's like, I don't think that's a great idea. But he's like, no, it's fine. This guy, like, I for some reason, I trust him that he's not going to do anything crazy because he seems like childlike almost, and there's something about him. He's like, I don't know what's wrong with him, but I'm gonna I'm going to try it. So he opens the cell and like goes into the cell by himself with the largest man in the world. And then he gets his dick touched.
And yeah. It's in prison. So right away, the man grabs his penis and is
he
like...
He literally does, yeah.
Yeah. He's like, I didn't even fucking have the soap. And then he grabs him by the dick. He's like, what? Now, this is highly irregular. And then he's like, all of a sudden, my dick feels really good. He's like, I don't want it to feel good. This is not... I don't want this. But then all of a sudden, his penis is healed. And John Coffey coughs out a bunch of gnats. That's what happens.
Infection gnats.
Dick gnats.
I do like that there is an actual bug called no-see-ums because they're too tiny to see.
That is the South's contribution to science. What are you call that bug, Cletus? I'm calling no-see-um a thing.
No-see-um sounds Latin.
I believe it's plural of no-see-I. Right.
It's like if Boomhauer from King of the Hill named an insect.
Yeah, no, I'm no see him in there. And about how? Yeah, Boomhauer, that was a really good point. Propane. So, no more pain, though, in the penis. And then John Coffey takes a nap. Like most of us do after giving a prison guard a hand job. A healing hand job, excuse me. It's a magic healing hand job.
Less or more? More or less?
More.
In this case, it was definitely more because he performed a divine cure through the power of a hand job. And then, even though it was a hand job, he still spit it out.
That's the miracle.
It's like David Blaine was a prostitute.
I'm going to come on your tits now. She's like, well, how did that get in there? So, that happens.
This is all important plot.
This is all essential. Then the other character gets introduced around this time. Oh, actually, there's this other like background thing of the warden and his wife who is dying of, you know, no medicine has been invented yet disease.
I'll say his wife is the most Stephen King character in the book.
Oh, yeah.
Because she has a brain tumor the size of a watermelon. And it makes her say just the things regular Stephen King's characters would say in other books.
I laughed out loud, actually.
Some of them were really,
finally
they were
got
really
the
good.
Part where they came to her house in the middle of the night, just at the end. And you just hear her say something totally vile, just like they could hear it out the window. And I laughed.
It was. I don't know exactly what line you're talking about because I wrote it down. It was, come in here and poke my mud hole, you son of a bitch. And this is like the South in 1932. They're like, oh my gosh, this woman's saying such terrible things. Woman shouldn't be talking that way. He's like, poke my mud hole. Like, I wouldn't even say that now.
Well, maybe on your birthday. Like, hey, honey, you think tonight I could poke your mud hole? It's like,
yeah,
yes, I can't say
around,
no today.
Right, yeah.
I guess. Strangely, that detail was taken out of the movie. She just moaned and was miserable.
I want to hear her in the movie say, poke my mud hole. And Tom Hanks be like, oh, I do declare.
That does not make my penis want to rise again. So it's like mud hole. It's like the butt, but not spelt the same. So that's like another thing. Like, what does this have to do with anything? And then the last character that matters, and then you could then the rest of the dominoes fall into place.
Well, there's two more characters that matter.
Oh, well, Wild Bill, who is...
And the mouse.
Oh, yeah, and the mouse, that's true, friend. The last human that matters is Wild Bill, who's just a piece of shit psychopath. He's a 19-year-old who is, you know, picture a 19-year-old meth head, and that's what Wild Bill is like.
Without the meth.
Yeah, he's just born that way. He's built different. He's in jail for killing a bunch of people, including a pregnant woman and a cop or something, and a robbery, and he's just intransigent piece of shit.
People are brought him in is like he just doesn't give a shit about anything.
Yep. And now that you told him he's going to get executed, you know, even though he has an appeal pending or something like that because he's a child, or they're trying to claim he's, like, you know, mentally not capable of making decisions or something, knowing that he's going to get killed, he's not going to start caring now. So he uses every opportunity to be a fucking asshole, and it's really funny, some of the stuff he does.
He is expertly played by Sam Rockwell in the film.
Yeah, perfect casting.
It is perfect. Even though he's not 19, it doesn't even matter.
But I mean, the movie's fucking 25 years ago, so Sam Rockwell...
I guess it must be a long time, yeah. Shit.
Pretty young at the time. You know, he was under 30, I would think. But he's perfect in that role. Actually, I think most of the casting in that movie was really excellent.
It's an amazing film.
It's really
good. It's the best Stephen King movie ever made.
He really peaked in 1996. Nate, did you see the movie?
I have not.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
This one, you know, it's absolutely worth it. It's
Tom Hanks movie. Have you not seen that?
Yeah, it's like, I think was it nominated for like Oscar or some shit?
I bet it was. Have you not like been on a plane, Nate? Like, seen a shitty, like, seen a movie or like been bored in a...
He just takes trains.
I've just never seen this one.
Jesus Lord.
It's actually like, it's very, very good. Like, if you saw it and you did not know it was a Stephen King book, you wouldn't have believed it. Like, what? He didn't write that? The dick fart guy?
dick fart ghosts? No.
Mr. Jahoobies?
Yeah, Mr. Jahoobies did not write this poignant piece of racial commentary from 1930s America.
This was Dr. Jahoobies. He leveled up. It was nominated for 4 Oscars, including Best Picture. Michael Clarke Duncan was nominated for Best Supporting Actor, who was also perfect casting for...
Yeah, I don't think they could have made that movie without him being alive. Like, there's no one exists since he died that would fit that part.
It's hard to picture somebody. I mean, because that was like kind of his thing in the late 90s, early 2000s, of being just the imposingly large black man who could act, actually. It wasn't just like...
Yeah.
Somebody's bodyguard. You can't
just get Shaq.
Yeah. Oh my God. Imagine if it was Shaq.
he did Kazam and the Green Mile.
Or Dikembe Mutombo would have been an amazing John Coffey.
I don't know if he could pull off the Southern accent.
I don't want him to. I want him to talk exactly like Dikembe Mutombo. Like, all right, now it's time to go to the chisel. Like, no, no, no. Not in my house. So, yeah, the movie, we could talk about the movie later, I guess, I don't know. But the other character is the mouse, who they meet, and they're like, I hear Steamboat Willie's going to be public domain in 2024, let's name the mouse that. And then they're like, oh no, they just passed that new law, it's been extended. So
they keep changing it.
Because Steamboat Willie was supposed to lapse into public domain in the 90s, actually.
And now it finally did.
And probably the 70s before that.
And it was that fucking dumb hippie Sonny Bono who sponsored the legislation to extend... copyright of all that shit. But as of a couple days ago,
I saw Disney, he's like, I got you, babe.
They're like, don't worry, we got a lot of other stuff. The beat goes on. Yeah? Sonny and Cher jerks?
I don't know a second Sonny and Cher song.
Well, what's unfortunate is that Disney does not like to share. So they were very protective of their silly mouse. But that was extended. So they call it Steamboat Willie.
He was defeated by the mountain lobby, though.
More like the trees on the mountain as you're skiing lobby. They just will not budge. Mm. So they meet a mouse. That's how boring it is on the block. And like, that mouse is fucking cool. Let's give it some sandwiches.
There really is nothing to do.
But, I mean, I don't know what they were expecting. Like, hey, give that mouse a piece of sandwich. I bet it eats it. It's like, yeah, it's a fucking mouse. Like,
but it... You know, normally a mouse wouldn't walk up to you and look at you. They'd be like, I got to run away. Like, this mouse seems weird. He's like, he seemed a little too extrovert smart for mouse. His own good. Yes, he's kind of just, he wants to have more friends. He's bored. He's bored too.
So they befriend the mouse, who then becomes the pet of Del, the Cajun bumbling man-child, who he trains it to do mouse circus tricks, like climb on his head and... do a backflip or something, or push a spool of yarn.
Plays fetch.
But, and they're like, Jesus Christ, this is the best goddamn mouse I've ever seen. It must have an IQ of 160. And then they're interested in the mouse.
This mouse must be some kind of goddamn genius.
Yeah, that's how they feel. So those are all the characters. And the Cajun guy renames the mouse Mr. Jangles. Mr. Jingles? Jangles? What was it?
It's Mr. Jingles, but it's pronounced Messa Jangles. Because he's Cajun as fuck.
That's true.
It's a magic hyper intelligent mouse.
It's Algernon.
It's
Algernon. For it. That was the working title of the book, is Prison for Algernon.
And I could do some more with this. It was actually based around the mouse at first, yes.
And So then the threads start coming together. And unlike most times when Stephen King's threads get together and you just get a fucking hairball with a little bit of cum on it.
It's more like a sock, but just for your dick.
Parts of it are crunchy.
Why do I have this? What's the point of this?
I'm not in the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I don't need this dick sock.
So I forget what happens, but
once he heals his cock, Paul is like, this prisoner is funny. I'm going to go talk to the reporter who did all the reporting on him murdering and raping those little girls and ask him, do you think he's weird? Or think he really did it? That's kind of like the next thing. And he drives over like 27 unpaved miles of road to meet a guy. And this is another
like,
funny.
He absolutely did it. He's black.
But he's like, yeah, I know he seems simple and shy and reserved and nice and repentant. But let
they
me tell you a little
him
story.
With the girl's bodies in his arms.
And saying, I tried to take it back. And then, well, that kind of...
Yeah,
seems pretty.
It's a little incriminating, yeah.
And then, but this guy, the reporter guy, he might have a name. I don't really care. He's sitting out on his porch, reporting or something, while his wife is making windowsill pies. And then Paul's like, I just have a weird feeling. He's like, let me tell you a story. I used to have a dog, and that dog was all cool and shit till it ate my son's face. Come here, son. And he shows him his kid's like mauled face. And Paul's thought, do you remember what Paul thought when he saw the face? He's like, oh, that poor kid. He's going to get beat up every day at school. No one's going to be his friend, and he's going to be a virgin unless he pays a whore. That's what he thought.
He's like, it was a different time. It's very pragmatic. He's not like, wrong.
There weren't ugly chicks in 1900s. Like, women would be like, hey, he's good to me. He's a nice guy. Like, I'm not winning any prizes.
Half
like,
his face is fine.
He's got he can't like, it was a terrible, tragic thing, a poor child. But he's like, look at my son's face. Look at it.
Sometimes a good dog just does these things. Like that guy, because black people are animals.
It's yeah.
Like,
oh. Yeah.
And it's still 1930s Louisiana, and Paul is still the paragon of humanity for the time, but he's even just like, yeah, I guess, yeah.
Checks out.
Mm. I mean, he thinks something's different about John, and he never says the N-word, but it's still apparent that, like, yeah, they're different than us, because having an opinion otherwise would have been anachronistic.
Well, I like when John...
It's still like that in Louisiana.
I don't know if it's all like that in the South, but...
Louisiana.
It depends. New Orleans is pretty cosmopolitan.
Yeah, but they ain't in New Orleans.
Well, we have been accused of being racist against the South before. So,
Louisiana is where David Duke ran for Senate and didn't lose by much.
In the 90s?
Yeah.
Was it the 80s?
You could still say the N-word then. It was a different time. That was his platform. So let's keep this N-word today, N-word tomorrow. And word forever. And like someone already did something like that. And it was pretty bad too.
Yeah.
But when Paul's like, that guy healed my dick, I think the most racist thing in the book is he goes, no, it couldn't have been the black guy. It must have been God. White God healed it. He just used the black man as a vessel.
He's a tool like we use them for.
Yeah. He's like, yeah. There's no way that simple black man has magic powers. It was Jesus. White Jesus did that.
Famously white Jesus.
Yeah, I like my white, hippie bearded
white
Jesus.
White, definitely from like Missouri Jesus.
I believe, don't the Mormons think the
Garden of Eden was in Missouri?
Is in Missouri? Yeah.
Yeah. Right outside Branson.
You go see that after you see some like riverboat show. You go check out the Garden of Eden. So then what happens, Nate? Set up everything.
So
there's still half a book left.
Was. I can't remember if it was Percy or if it was Wild Bill.
If it was a bad thing, Percy did.
But somebody tricks, somehow gets the mouse and squashes him.
Percy. That's Percy does it because Del touches Dick and he's been like being nice to like make everyone believe that, you know, he's being good, but he was waiting for his moment of revenge for brushing against his dick.
Which we'll get to in just a second. But so Percy like gets the mouse and kills it. Just like crushes it with his foot. And of course, Del is, you know, heartbroken because, you know, is a very sad man.
This is his only friend.
Yeah, he's very sad. And somebody brings the mouse to John Coffey.
Paul does.
Paul brings the mouse to John Coffey.
Give it to me, boss.
And John Coffey heals it. And then also, and then again, the gnats fly out of his mouth afterward, but then the mouse is fine.
It is important that the mouse was not dead, but it was very, very close to being dead.
Yeah, he can't bring you back from the dead, otherwise he would have saved those little girls. He could like Wolverine you, though. He could, you know, that healing.
He can jumpstart the car, but he can't change the battery.
Maybe?
I don't know how cars work.
And now, it's not just Paul. Everybody on the cell block, you know, knows that John Coffey is like magic and has these healing powers.
Except Percy.
Also kind of like, yeah, well, people are able to convince themselves that, oh, I just misunderstood, you know. Oh, the mouse wasn't actually dead or wasn't actually hurt or something like that. And so they just find a way to refuse to believe it, kind of, but now the secret is out. Now other people know as well. That's going to be important later. So, but Percy, what he does is he somehow gets himself into... He's like, okay, when we do Del's execution...
He agrees. Everyone hates Percy, and Percy hates them. He's like, I'll transfer to another ward or something like that.
Another prison.
I'll transfer to literally any place else.
A cushier job.
Paper pushing job. If I get to throw the switch, if I get to lead the execution on someone, and he's like, you are a sociopath, but fine. So that's how he gets them to agree. Let me lead this one. And they're like, you do this, you got to bounce after that. You're gone, man. It's like, yeah, it's fine. I've achieved all I want to achieve here.
Now that I've climbed the Mount Everest of state sanctioned murder,
I've got no more goals.
So then he gets to lead, and they go through the practice thing, which is foreshadowing of what's supposed to happen. They do it with the character Toots, I think was his name. Was it Toots? The
little guy with the...
Toots? Oh.
No. I was just saying that. I don't know who it was.
It was Toots or Toots. Toots or Tuts. Maybe they say pronounce it one way because they're also Cajun. He's the little guy who has a little shopping cart that he brings around... The prison.
He's like a lifer. He's an inmate, though, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. He's just like, I'm selling an old cigarette and like a bottle cap for fun.
Oh, but he has moon pies and shit like that, too.
He does have moon pies because Wild Bill buys one, lets it soak into his mouth, and then pushes his cheeks in to spray like a big exploding zit on someone as they walk by. This is after he pissed on them.
The piss was one of my favorite things from the movie, and I still laugh at, and I happen to read the book, was when he pisses on one of the guards, right? He, like, saves all of his piss for the day.
Yeah, he saves up his piss.
And then, so he's like an evil genius, you know, like, he's like, what can I work with? And so he stands in the, like, right by the gate, you know, the bars, because it's an old-timey prison. When the guard walks by, he just pisses on him, like... But he stands back far enough that, like, by the time they're going to open the gate to, like, beat the shit out of him, he's already pissed on them. You know, it's, and then as he's laughing at them, he says it's, like, word for word in the movie, too. He's just like, I'm working on some turds, cooking them up for you. Got some soft ones for you tomorrow. It's like, what? When I saw this movie, I was 12. That was fucking hysterical. And... Turns out when you're 36, it's also still really funny.
It holds
up. I'm cooking up some turds for you. And he also But he also tried to choke one of the guards with his chain.
He got Percy. They brought him.
No, he tried to choke.
Oh, when they were Dean, bringing him, when they're transferring him into the prison, he was pretending to be all doped up from all his medical testing. And then when they got inside, he freaked out and started choking Dean with his handcuff chain. And Percy got knocked down and then, like, didn't do anything. And he was watching him choke out Dean instead of hitting him in the head with a stick like he likes to do to everybody else. But in this moment where it would have actually been useful, he just froze up.
He's a little
That's bitch. Also why they don't like Percy.
And instead, the big guard, Brutal.
Brutal.
He comes in and he cracks Wild Bill on the head with a baton. And they're like, ah, oh, paperwork now. Because this was the good old days of policing and prison guarding. You have to like write a memo. Had to billy club a guy. He asked for it, boss. Though he absolutely did in this case.
Yeah, he was trying to choke someone to death. But he grabbed Percy through the bars when he got too close and like whispered weird things into his ear.
Well, because he senses Percy's a little bitch and he could fuck with him, and that's really all he wants to do.
Yeah.
Like, the other guards aren't just going to be so susceptible to that. And then he also, like, he's like the Joker, you know? Like, when he started choking Dean, he was shouting out, like, ain't we having a party now? Or something like that is what he's shouting. Like, he's,
yeah,
this is fun. Ha ha ha. I'm crazy.
He's chaotic.
Yes. But then comes Del's.
It's finally the day. They bring Del in. They strap him into the electric chair. They go through, you know, oh, you got to do this part, and then you strap him in here, and blah, blah, blah. And Paul says, you know, and I didn't notice. I wish I had noticed, but I didn't notice that Percy didn't put the salt water on the head thing. So there's no salt water, like there's going to, like, which is going to, you know, increase the current, increase conductivity. So when he threw the switch, he didn't die right away. It was clearly very painful. His like eyes melted or something like that. And it was like really, it was very gruesome. You know, it's a Stephen King book. So, you know, he knows how to be very gruesome. And he was. And then afterwards.
Lights on fire, basically.
Right? Yeah.
His eyes exploded.
And so afterward, Paul is like, I fucking hate him so much. And at first they're like, this is it. Take every, you're going to transfer and you're going to take a sick day every single day, but he still doesn't. He's still on the ward, but they like absolutely hate him. They're like, we're going to get back at him. We're going to get back at Percy because he sucks just like Percy Weasley.
Every Percy, except Jackson, I guess. He's a good guy.
Is that right?
Better than the other two.
For, you know, a Greek.
So at this point, they're like, we got to do something about the warden's wife because we know she is dying of being alive.
And we have a magical Negro to help us. Let's go
literally,
to that trope.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. They are familiar with literary tropes as 1930s prison guards. But they saw him heal the mouse and they're all like, I don't know how it works, but you know, we got to do what we got to do.
Woman, mouse, same thing.
Yeah, same size brain.
it was a male mouse, you know.
Yeah.
Mr. Jenkins.
So they devise a plan, like, look, we know we could, you know, possibly go to jail for this, but, you know, the warden is a nice guy for a 1930s Louisiana prison warden.
Well, he's nice to the guards.
Yes.
They like him. They respect him as a boss.
And they like his wife. She's a nice lady. And she keeps on poking my butthole.
She just can't be satisfied.
We have got to sneak John out of here and bring him to their house to heal her. And the other guards are like, that's daggone crazy, but let's do it. Because dag nabbit. Who oobity boobity, you know, southern stuff. So then they do that. They sneak the biggest man in the world out of the prison. And they bring him and he fucking heals her. And the warden, when they arrive, is like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Because he doesn't know this guy can do anything magic. He just sees them bringing this guy and he's like, hey, just let this happen. And he just like, okay.
Fuck, which is a bold move. They got nothing else to do. They said she's going to die any minute now.
Yeah, and she keeps yelling about her mud hole, and it's really making me uncomfortable. So either kill her or make this stop. And then he cures her, and she just immediately looks a million times better because her brain's not been smushed no more.
Well, she no longer has a tumor on her head the size of a fucking anvil that's sitting there.
Her head's actually mostly tumor.
It's to turn her into the girl from The Exorcist temporarily. But the other thing that's important here is they got to get rid of Percy for a little while. Percy's a bitch. He'll snitch on them. So yeah, they put him in
his name is Percy.
He's fine. I mean, yeah, like perfect naming, Stephen Percy pisses pants. They put him in the padded room that they're constantly
straitjacket.
Yeah, that's right. The straitjacket. That was one of the the continuity errors Stephen King had to fix, because in the original version, Percy Wetmore, he's in the straitjacket and he at some point wipes the sweat from his brow. It's like he's in a straitjacket and he has no hands. How does he fucking do that?
You could use your sleeve.
But like, I think he said like he reached his hand up and wiped his brow, and it's like, uh-oh. So he mentioned that in the introduction as a fix. And they put him in the pattern.
I think
room.
If that's the only error, this is practically flawless, especially for Stephen King.
Oh, my God, yeah, no. That's something just like an editor would find, but no editor has ever looked at Stephen King's work since 1980. They're just like, fuck it, print it. Done. Where do I cash my check? But they put him in the pad room, which for some reason they spent a lot of time emptying out and refilling furniture into. It's like this weird closet storage room.
They use it as a storage space because they probably don't put a lot of people in there. They just beat them to death.
But what storage do they need? Like, I mean, I know that, you know, decluttering wasn't a thing yet in 1932, but neither was having stuff. Like, what are the, like, oh shit, I'm not using the beanbag chair anymore.
Old files, probably just a lot of files.
Papers, old wooden chairs.
Yeah, they don't have computers yet, so a lot of paperwork.
I guess.
And they got to execute a guy every 15 days.
That's true. So they throw Percy, they lock him in there, as he's like, you goddamn sons of bitches. And they shut up, bitch. And then they go heal a lady. The lady who is crying about her mud hole, they're like, I know what we need to bring her, and it's, well, let's just say it's the same letters as the British Broadcasting Corporation. And then that ought to please her mud hole. And then they come back.
Video, yeah.
They come back, and John Coffey held his breath this time.
He didn't let the gnats out.
He kept them in.
And he looks like shit.
Yeah, he's bad. And this is when he has his revenge, like Nat Turner.
You know, I'd say that was, if this was a Cormac McCarthy book, I'd say he planned that. But as Stephen King, I don't think he planned that.
No. But then he like burps in Percy's face, and he's like, how do you like that? And Percy catches a brain tumor.
Yeah.
Then he has, you know, plausible deniability or something like that, or some... He
basically goes catatonic.
But he does one.
Except he does one,
thing.
Yeah. He kills Wild Bill? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
There you go.
He shoots him.
One more thing.
He shoots him in his sleep.
He takes the gun and just shoots him. Yeah.
Because Wild Bill's being a prick. Do we know yet at this point that Wild Bill also killed the girls?
No, they found it out later.
That's the last part, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I just knew because I saw the movie.
Because they're like, why would he make Percy kill Wild Bill like that? Like, he's a dickhead, but like, John's a nice guy. He's not really one to give someone a murder tumor for no reason.
Well, you know, I can't get it right every time. But then Percy is like in catatonic for the rest of his life. He's put in a mental institution, so he loses. Sweet.
And so there's about a week or so until John Coffey's execution, and so Paul spends some time trying to figure out, like, is there a way we can show that he's actually innocent, or he does some more investigation and he finds out that it was actually Wild Bill that killed the girls. And John Coffey, when he's found holding their like corpses, he's like, and he says, like, I tried to fix it, or no, he kept saying, I'm sorry. I think that's just what he said.
He says, I'm sorry. I tried to take it back.
Yeah. And people thought that meant him saying, like, oh, no, I did it. That was actually him. He happened to be there, and he just tried to save them, but they were already dead. But that's why he was found with them. And so Paul is like, is there a way we can convince somebody? We write to the governor, write to a judge, write to the blah, blah, blah. And they're like, no, that's never going to work. This is 1932 Louisiana. No one is going to believe any of this. And so they have to do John Coffey's execution.
But John Coffey's like, that's cool. I'm actually okay with it. I really, the world sucks.
He says he's tired of living. He's tired of being alone.
Well, and
he's always alone.
And there's this like mystery thing, like where did he come from? He doesn't seem to remember anything or have any, nobody ever saw him before. It's like he just kind of magically appeared.
Someone did see him one time when like a tornado knocked down a building. And they pulled a bunch of dead bodies out, or people who were like practically dead, and then they just got better when they saw this giant guy hauling bodies out of the wreckage, and then he disappeared.
Right. So he's just like this like Tom Bombadil character who just walks around
forgetful.
With powers. Yeah. But oh my
Tom
god.
Tom Bumble.
Uncle Tom Bombadil. Oh no. Oh, that's terrible.
But he's like, yeah, it's all right, man. Just like I'm honestly pretty tired of this bullshit. Don't worry about
tired.
It. You're a good dude, and it's time for me to go.
I fixed your pecker. We're cool.
I healed that dick. Now, give me that juice.
and then he gets killed.
Yeah, they execute him because it's the South. Because
it was the law.
Yeah.
I am the law. But they put him
in. I am the law. Yeah.
So then cutting back and forth throughout this whole time in the old folks' home is elderly Paul and his lady girlfriend who, you know, because his wife is dead and, you know, I don't really know why, but he is told that this old lady, Elaine, I'm writing down my memories and writing down my story. And so finally he's like, here you go, read this shit.
Like, oh, another thing happened before John dies. He gives Paul a super hug or something, or just like gives him, he lays on hands him. And they're like, that was real weird. Thanks. He's like, no problem. Let's go kill me.
So then when Elaine is reading, she's like, oh my God, this guy has fucking dementia. What is this? This is not a story that happened to him. No, but she doesn't think that. But he's like, listen, I know it seems pretty wild, but let me just show you a little something I keep here in my pocket. It's my schmeckle. No, it's an old as fuck mouse. She's like, oh my God, that mouse must be almost in the public domain.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, it's Mr. Jingles. He's in, you know, mouse death is imminent.
But he said it was like the mouse, like Mouse Methuselah.
Mouse Thuselah, Jimmy.
Yeah. So damn it.
Come on.
I feel like they said in the book Mouse Methuselah.
That's, I mean, he's an old man. He was a dad, right? Was he a dad? Did he have children?
Mr. Jangles?
No, the Paul.
Paul? Paul has children because Elaine, the lady he's telling the story to, was like, I'm reading this story and it says you have grown children by the time this has already happened. That was 1932.
Oh, yeah.
Did you have these kids when you were a kid? He's like, I'm 103 years old right now. She's like, what the fuck? And your dick still works?
Wow.
Yeah, man. You bet.
Apparently white also doesn't crack. Oh, weird.
Because he's never really been sick. And he's like old as fuck and doing fine, as was Mr. Jangles.
But it's been, you know, 40 years since his wife died. And when she died in a, getting hit by a bus or something.
Their bus hit an oil tanker and killed everyone but him.
Oh, it's like this is the start of Unbreakable.
The start of Final Destination. Oh, yeah, Unbreakable, I guess. Unbreakable Final Destination.
But then the crossover, he didn't know you needed. But then he sees like the ghost of John Coffey. He's like, that's for you, sir. And they're like, what the fuck? Huh? Just killed a busload of people. But not, I don't understand this magic. And yeah, that was when they were going to his granddaughter's like high school graduation or something.
Yeah, he's old as shit.
He's old as shit. I mean, the mouse is old as shit. The mice live like 17 days. This is a
like a year.
This is like a 60-year-old mouse.
It's incredible.
And mice live a year.
It's the only mouse on Social Security.
The mouse, he's single-pawedly bankrupting mouse Social Security.
He's the only one to collect.
He paid in 18 cents in 1932. He's been collecting ever since. And then he's like, I don't know. Fuck, if a mouse lives to be that long, what the hell's going to happen to me? The end. One thing I like different about the ending of the movie, I'm pretty sure in the end of the movie, the mouse doesn't die. Instead, the Elaine character dies.
Elaine dies in the book, too.
Oh, does she? But the mouse doesn't die, and he's like, who knows? It's like a voiceover or something like that at that point. And he's like,
we'll both live forever.
He's like, who the fuck knows? And like, what is the purpose of this? Right? It's kind of like a mystery to the end of the movie that I didn't.
Yeah, well, it's never really explained why John was magic. I mean, it's the 1930s South, so they're like, must be Jesus, but it's Stephen King, so who the fuck knows? Cosmic Turtle.
Does this book, where does this fit? Because aren't all his books related somehow? Don't they all have like...
They're in shared multiverses.
Shared universe. Like, where? How does this
one
factor?
It's a shared multiverse, so anything is really fits anywhere.
I feel like this one must be pretty loosely tethered to the other crazy books, though.
They're all loosely tethered
to reality. Yeah,
this is one of his most grounded books, perhaps,
and the best I've read. What do you guys think, though?
So I know Jimmy really likes it. I thought it was definitely okay. I thought I didn't really.
Isn't
like
that an Oasis
frame.
Album?
I didn't really like the frame story, but that's the part. Was that in the original, or did he add that later?
That was in the original, I think.
Yeah. It was in the original.
I thought the frame was definitely the least interesting part. I don't see what it really added except to say, Mr. Jangles is still alive.
Well, just so that also Paul lives to be for, you know, a million years old.
Yeah. I guess it had to do something. But I feel like they could have, like, just tagged on an end thing of him at a retirement home for, like, one chapter. And it would have had the same understanding. Like,
there was
too much frame.
I think, okay. A better ending or a better book would have been just cut the frame story and have it end with, yep, and then we just the very tragic, you know, we had to kill John Coffey, we had to execute John Coffey, and, you know, and that was it, the end. I thought there would be, though this was still a tight story, it didn't have all this extra stupid nonsense, but, you know, I mean, at least compared to Stephen King, but it still didn't need that.
I feel you on that.
I mean, it was definitely okay. I do remember, in terms of the other Stephen King books we read, I do remember liking Lizzie's story. I thought that was actually pretty good, too.
Lizzie's story was very nice. It was like, this is actually like a nice story about love.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, like, this story is about a car that wants to kill you.
Yeah. Or a dog.
That's a big dog, though.
Yeah, so I definitely thought it was a lot better. But I also didn't love it. It was merely okay.
I love Stephen King in his own way, in his own mad universe. I think this is objectively his best written work. It's the closest he will ever get to, like, true poignancy by the end of it. There's plenty of little, you know, like, Stephen King lines in there about, you know, weird dicks and poking mud holes. But, like, by the end, it's genuinely sad when they have to execute John. And that is not something he gets. In Lisey's story, I think, would be, like, the other one. But he does not achieve, like, actual emotional depth very often.
No.
Even in, like, the end of The Dark Tower, you're, like, 7 books in and, like, so many characters you lose along the way, and like they mean things to you, but it's like, yeah, that's a bummer. But like, you really do feel like these are like someone else could have written this book.
There's very little about it that you're like, that's a Stephen King book, except for the fact that a UTI was a major plot point
and the mud hole poking.
I mean, like, even having a brain tumor makes people do all sorts of weird shit, you know. I guess
they make you talk like Stephen King.
Maybe he's got a brain tumor less. There is one line from the introduction that I thought was, Stephen King. And he's talking about, you know, he had this idea about a prison thing and didn't know what to do with it for all these years. But then, you know, I was writing this thing, I was doing that thing, and I felt as if I were creating the world almost from scratch, as I knew almost nothing about life on death row in the border south, that's a weird sentence, in the border south during the Depression. I don't know how to read.
I guess that's like
the border south.
Louisiana is near the border. Is not the border the south.
Border of the ocean.
Well, anyway. you know, he's like, so he says, like, I had this idea. I didn't know anything about it. Next sentence, he goes, research can remedy that, of course. But I thought research might kill the fragile sense of wonder I'd found in my story. He's like, I could have looked this shit up. And I was like, no, fuck it. He could have looked it up after he wrote the story. Like, let me check some of those details.
I kind of get that because historical accuracy doesn't matter for this.
It doesn't.
No. But if anything, sometimes people get like, get too bogged down.
Sure, you could turn into like, you know, the people like Mad Men or one of those shows where it's like every fucking tie clip is from 1967 or whatever it is.
Wow, the show is still boring.
I really did not like Mad Men. That is really a boring show, but
really boring, yeah.
I made it one episode and then didn't keep watching.
I watched every single one and I was like, why am I doing this? Please stop me, someone.
I did a season and a half. I was like, I don't care how good looking that guy is. I don't give a shit. But the thing is, like, I can imagine if you're writing or creating something, right? And you're like, well, it's the Green Mile. Oh, I like that because like your last mile, but it's green. That's a cool title. Wait, let me look. Did they have green linoleum in 1932? And you like looked that up. Like, okay, they did, I think. Okay, and instead of prison.
Oh, my God, the floors were all pleather in prisons?
But, like, you can get. So then he sat at his desk, and he pulled out his pen. And, wait, what kind of pens did they have? Like, I can imagine you could get paralyzed by looking up every detail.
Yeah, this isn't a fucking Michael Crichton book.
That was his process. So let me look up all the details, and then a book baby comes out of it. But he could have looked something up.
Adjectives make this a novel.
Very dinosaur. I don't know. So I liked it, but I just thought that quote. I was like, wow, what a fucking still. He's like, yeah, I wanted to write a historical fiction book. And I was like, should I look up the history part? Fuck it.
I'm going to lean into the fiction part.
I'll play to my strengths.
It takes place in the past, so it's historical. Like, you know, suck my dick. Fuck you. I'm Stephen King.
Do you know what it was like to be in a fucking death row warden in 1932? Well, there you go. Nope. So do we say who should read it? Do we do that already?
No, we haven't. I think if you like books, you should read it. If you don't like Stephen King, maybe give this one a shot. If you do like Stephen King, absolutely give this one a shot because it's very good.
Yeah, I would say as someone who does not really like Stephen King often, that if someone said, like, I hate Stephen King, well, you should try this one.
Yeah, and I don't want to convert anybody because it's not going to be like, if you like this one, you're still not going to like the others.
Right, but you might like, I mean, I did leave this with a different kind of like, oh, he is a good writer, I guess. I just maybe don't like what he writes
he's
about
capable.
All the time.
He's capable. He's just a fucking weird guy.
And yeah, and the weirdness doesn't work for me, but I'm clearly in the minority of people who feel that way. So, you know, I mean, he sells a million books an hour.
Yeah.
But I thought this was
he's responsible for the end of the Amazon rainforest.
That's why Amazon, the published, you know, the retailer had to start. It was to keep up with Stephen King books. That's where they got the name. They're like, we're running out of that forest for this fucking guy's books. He didn't touch the trees in Maine.
No.
No, but this one's a real bangor.
All right, tell us what you thought. Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
Or follow us on Twitter at drunkguysbc.
Or go to Facebook and Instagram at drunkguysbookclub.
You probably stopped listening, and I don't think you mentioned we have a Patreon, but you can support the podcast there. Patreon.com, just Drunk Guys Book Club. Money's us, please. Thank you.
And join us on Goodreads, where we reads goods, boss.
And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.